This one's good if it goes.
Oh, it did. Holy
cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
Because you got hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it.
Jones. Oh,
yes.
Oh,
I can't believe it. Are you serious?
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast known as Courtside. I'm Seth Greenberg with my man Dan Dukich. And, you know, you can just get the straight talk. We're not going to BS it. We're going to tell it the way it is. Hey, D-Squared, here's the deal. I'm watching all this NBA stuff because I have no life, and that's what I do. There are a couple things that are clearly evident, observations, all right? And I'm going to have you react to them, then I'll give you my full take, all right? Observation number one, I don't get it, but in the NBA where everyone says, you know, roles are defined and, you know, players kind of champion their roles, I don't understand why a lot of guys basically show people what they can't do as opposed to what they can do and what they do really well. That's number one. And I'll get to it later because I know you're going to have an opinion. Number two, certain dudes are just built for the regular season. And certain dudes are just built for the playoffs. And you know what? I don't know about this process thing, but this process thing is unprocessed. It has no process. And Ben Simmons' game, really good player, great open court vision in the regular season, can guards, got length. You can only be so good in the NBA if not only can't you make a shot, if you can't make a shot, but now you won't even take a shot. You won't even take a layup. You don't want to get to the free throw line. So, like, there's a big difference in the NBA between being a guy that can put up numbers in the regular season and a guy who is a winning player. Remember, that's the same Ben Simmons that couldn't take his team to the NCAA tournament when he was at LSU and the whole thing fell apart. He didn't play his last game. I think that as I'm watching this NBA team, the best NBA team right now, not even close, the Phoenix Suns. I will get to that later. Now you can expound.
I wish that you and I had an NBA show because the things you and I have said, the list of things that I said during SportsCenter about players, eventually what they became, is so long about being right. And I'm patting myself on the back. And one of them was Ben Simmons, Seth. Look, you and I have talked about this numerous times. If you can't shoot, you can't play in big games in the NBA.
And, yes.
And that's legitimate. You're seeing it. And here, kids out there, in basketball, you're one bad miss away sometimes from losing confidence. You just are. And I don't care how good you are. Now, great players never happens. But if you're not a great player. So, Seth, I'm with you. The list of things that you and I have been right about relative to the NBA is staggering. But in Ben Simmons' case, here's a bigger issue. What do you do with him? What do you do?
$30 million a year, right? Something like that? What's he make?
18. Do you tell him to get in the gym? I mean, what do you do?
I've seen those videos every summer. Oh, Ben's working his jump. Yeah. Look, he's shooting a three. He has no desire to hit a spot, elevate, and jump up and shoot it. So he can't even collect himself to pull up and shoot. He shoots that little push runner. So, I mean, like getting in the gym, not working.
I agree. Here's the other thing. I've always said this. The only thing in basketball that I will tell anybody, anytime, anywhere, that I know as much, if not more, about is shooting. That's the only thing. And I don't give a damn. He has, and I did a show on SportsCenter one time about this. I think it was SportsCenter, College Basketball Live, about the stiffness in him. That thing isn't going to be fixed by just Magic Johnson. I always said this about Magic Johnson. He held the elbow under the ball, had a great stroke, had a great looking stroke, but he just couldn't make shots because he didn't have to until he worked on it, and then he became a great three-point shooter. Ben Simmons doesn't have that. We can get into that more. Second point about the Suns, I don't know what to tell anybody. That team plays basketball. That team doesn't play isolation basketball. That team doesn't play dribble till the ball pukes basketball. That team plays basketball.
100%.
Let me ask you this. your brother, big time coach in Europe. Does your brother think that's more of an European style that they're playing based on how the NBA is now?
We haven't talked specifically. He does tell me sometimes he can't watch the NBA. He goes like, what are they doing? I mean, like just in terms, he said, it's just not good basketball. Like you watch the European coaches. And again, it's different players. They hold guys accountable. I mean, it's plain and simple. And every, you know, the ball moves, people move, the best players get the most shots, obviously, but you put guys in position to play to the strengths, obviously. The ball doesn't get stuck. The flow is different. I look at the NBA. Here's a couple. I got this from an NBA former general manager yesterday because I was losing my mind watching these games. I said, why don't you just like the ball comes in one guy's hands and he dribbles, gets a high ball screen, and then he tries to make a play. Let me ask you something. Why wouldn't you come down, flow, get the ball reversed, all right, create some type of ball movement and people movement, and then get it to that guy where now he's forcing a closeout or now he's catching a dribble handoff where he can come off a ball screen, and now you've actually moved the defense. You've made a cut that's actually a scoring cut. You made a screen that actually someone had a chase and curl, so someone could have had a show, so maybe you could replace on the curl. He goes, oh, no, that wouldn't work. I said, what do you mean why it wouldn't work? He goes, because if the ball at the end of the possession didn't end up in the right guy's hands, all right, then the GM would be mad at the coach because the owner would be mad at the GM. I said, well, here's the deal. That's where coaching comes in. You practice it so you can get to that point. He goes, well, what if they deny the ball? All right, you know what's going to happen. Then if they deny the ball, then you're creating a gap, and that's why you have these other guys. But it's almost, and I don't want to use the term, I mean, like, first of all, the makeup of teams, and I understand role players and I understand main players, and which is great, and roles need to be defined. Roles are defined until you get to certain great players. Because if I'm a certain great player, and I'm going to use Giannis as an example, and he's a great player, and he's shooting threes, how well is that role defined? How well is that role defined? It's not defined. So, like, I mean, the rest of the team knows Giannis can't make that shot. He's shooting 10%. So you're not coaching him, but you're coaching everyone else, number one. Number two is, you know, like, to me, the good coaches and the good teams coach really get the guys to buy in. And I think it's all relationship-driven. You win the games you're supposed to win if you have more talent than someone else. To win the games you need to win, you got to have – a relationship with your players so you can talk to them, you know, what I used to call straight talk. You could have straight talk with them, say X, Y, and Z. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing this. This is how we're doing it. And look, I think there are some great coaches in the NBA. I really do. I think the coaching in the NBA is good, but I don't understand some of the stuff. And like the stuff we were talking about, like why can Monty Williams get his team to pass the ball, move the ball, cut hard, play with flow, take good shots? Why does Spoelstra have the ability to do that? Why are some guys don't have the ability to do that? I think Quinn Snyder does a great job. I'll tell you who I think is great. I love Ty Lue. I think those guys play. I think they play for him. I think he talks straight to him. He demands of them. I think he's got his team playing really good ball. I mean, there are a lot of good coaches, but I can't watch some of this stuff.
Seth, look, I'm with you on all of it. I am. You know, all right, let me go back to something that you said, the general manager, the coach, the player. Okay, let's go through this just for a second. So now Luka Doncic comes out. He's yelling at Rick Carlisle. Are they still in it? Nope. To your point. Now it comes out, well, Rick, coach the team, don't call timeout. But, hey, man, I don't give a damn how good you are. Sit your ass down. I'm the coach. You're the player. Right? Then we hear about, you know, what's his face at New Orleans, Zion Williams, his family. We don't want to play. It's hard enough to play basketball in the NBA, no matter how good you are. You don't need to be the player and the coach and the general manager. You just don't. Now,
well, I got a question for you on that quickly. I got a question for now. Like, what made Zion Williams' family think that they're like this is not an AAU program. This is
right.
New Orleans Pelicans. Like all of a sudden, you've been in the league 2 years. You had some injuries. You still made the playoffs, and now you're having his stepfather or someone in his family basically say, "I know more than the people in the front office, and I don't Come on now. Just let the kid be a kid. Let him be part of the team. Let him continue to grow as a player. So I'll tell you what's the next thing's happening. You know, you have that. Your next thing's going to happen. You're going to have LeVar Ball. He's going to have his 2 cents. Well, you're going to have, why don't we just create an AAU program in New Orleans where, you know, basically it's you know, everyone's going to own the team. All the parents are going to own the team and be in charge of the roster. I mean, come on. Let the players, those are the guys that need, let them play. Let them develop. Let them grow. Let them mature. Stay out of their lives.
That's the same thing with Doncic, though. You don't all of a sudden have. Now, maybe it's a part of the NBA. When Magic was with the Lakers, Westhead was out, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, there's different, you know, whether it was, you know, Michael Jordan, they always said maybe did something. But to me, like, there's a reason things are unfolding in Dallas after so many years. There's a reason. This doesn't just happen that Donnie Nelson wants to quit a job he's worked at his whole adult life, or Rick Carlisle in that situation just walks out. And then I read about Doncic and I'm like, God dang, isn't it interesting that those teams aren't left? They're not left. They're not playing. Talented as hell. Porzingis. I told Ryan Russillo on his show when they drafted Porzingis. I was made fun of on that show as a bit. Because I said, whoever drafts Porzingis is going to end up in the lottery, which the Knicks did. And he's never going to be what he's supposed to be because he got bad eyes. Now, coaches understand eyes and temperament better than anybody does. But I'm just fascinated by this. Zion Williamson's team doesn't make the playoffs, and yet he already does have some type of control by getting Van Gundy fired. And Doncic's team hasn't done jack. And his guy, he all of a sudden is the guy telling the coach when and when not to take a timeout and yelling at the coach about the guy who's the analytics guy. Guess where they're at, kids? They're out. Yeah, but Doncic could get 35-10. Good. Where's his team? Zion averaged 27. Good. Where's his team? At some point, I have a friend who's a general manager in the NFL, and he swears at some point, owners are going to want their teams back. The whole player thing is great, but at some point, they're going to want accountability. Exactly what you're talking about. At some point, and I got a friend in the NBA who says the same thing. At some point, you know, we're going to want our teams back. And you're seeing it with the Suns. You're seeing a team with the Suns that plays basketball, that doesn't have to have their ass kissed by a coach. He just coaching them, and they got great leadership in Chris Paul. And I got to tell you, Seth, I'm rooting like hell for the Suns because to me, the Suns are what basketball should be. On the sideline, on the court, and in between the interactions of player and coach. I watch them every night.
I agree. I could watch the Suns. I tell you, I'm enjoying watching the Clippers. I enjoyed watching Utah. If they had Conley, I think they would have been fine. I mean, I just think
can I tell you something else? I enjoyed watching the Sixers get their ass beat at home. I enjoyed the shit out of that. I enjoyed that. Like, I watched Ben, and I think Ben Simmons is a nice kid. Like, when I did his games, he wasn't a problem on that team, but that team was an AAU team.
That team was jealous of him.
Yes, yeah. That one guy, Quarterman, as soon as Ben Simmons came on the court for practice, when I went to practice, you could see division. Some guys went and shot with Simmons, this guy Quarterman, and these guys were over here. You know, I mean, it was like –
yeah, I think Ben Simmons is a really nice guy. And like, it's not his fault that.
No.
Look, hey, he is talented. He's got incredible vision. It seems like he plays hard. He rebounds the ball. He just can't shoot. And you can only be, I agree with you, you can only be so good in that league if you can't shoot. And not only can't he shoot, but he won't shoot. So you're playing literally, his man's playing toast to the free throw line, which is disrupting passing lanes. But no, I think he's competitive. I think that he has a really high basketball IQ. The ball gets out of his hands in 2 seconds when he gets it, but there's a difference in the game. And until he can do that one aspect, he can be only so good. And it's sad because you can't even play him at the end of the game because he puts no pressure on the defense. And then you got Joel Embiid. I mean, like last possession of the game, he gets the ball in the middle of the floor on one knee and driving and spinning. I mean, you just you know, Tobias Harris couldn't, and I'm a big Tobias Harris fan. His dad's a great guy. He couldn't finish around the basket. That's like $90 million worth of contracts. And you got three guys that can't finish a game for you. You know, you're relying on Tyrese Maxey the game before.
So, 93 million.
Is it 93 million?
No.
So I'm excited about the playoffs. I'm excited. I think Atlanta and Milwaukee will be intriguing to me. I think that Atlanta's maybe the hardest team to defend because of the way Trey plays and the way they use him. I also think that Nate McMillan's done an incredible, incredible job defensively and how he prepares and takes away people. So, you know, you're going to see a lot of the similar things done to Milwaukee that they did to Julius Randle.
Can I go back to Atlanta for a second?
Yeah.
Atlanta sometimes gets way too, like, seventh grade-ish. We're going to look for Trae Young. So I thought it was massive yesterday that Kevin Huerter did what he did. Like, yeah. It was cute. You got to have a guy outside that can go get that done in a game like that, not just Trae Young. I thought Huerter was terrific. I think John Collins has very been good. Fantastic.
Like, very good.
And I love Nate McMillan. I said this at the time, and I'll ask you about this. Seth, I don't care what it is. I don't care whether it's college or pro, unless there's some underlying deviant or illegal behavior by a coach, I think you got to be very careful in the league, like the NBA, the NFL, messing around with winning. Thinking that, hey, man, 43-28 isn't good enough in Indiana. You know, that's why they got rid of Nate McMillan. You also got to be very careful listening to players. Like Nate McMillan, Malcolm Brogdon came into Indiana, and for whatever the freaking reason, he became like the clubhouse lawyer. And next thing you know, after 43-28, McMillan's out. I got to tell you, man, I thought Nate McMillan did a great job in Indiana, was a fantastic human being, person. All the players loved him, and I'm so happy for him. But they got to find a guy every night to do what Huerter did, or they're in for a long series with Milwaukee, because Milwaukee is one of those NBA – this is old-school NBA where Jordan had a bust through the – he had a bust through the Pistons. You know, the Pistons before them had a bust through the Celtics, you know what I mean? The Atlanta Hawks could never bust through the Celtics. So this old NBA East.
But two, really I think two teams that have a little physicality. I'm interested to see how the game's efficient. I just, me personally, I'm playing Trae Young. I'm trapping him over half court, not letting him get the ball back. Not into a ball screen. I'm not waiting for him to get to a ball screen. You get to the ball screen, you're too late.
Yep.
Get it out of his hands as early as possible. Don't let him get the ball back. At the end of the game, you can't let him play off of that high flat ball screen and then throw lobs and runners and all that. It's hard, but the more you can limit that, the better off you are. And if you get beat by Huerter, is he going to beat you over seven nights?
No.
I don't know.
No. No, but they got to have guys doing that at different times.
Yeah.
You know,
I think Holiday – see, I think Holiday – Giannis is quick enough to get up on the screen. Like, you know, I think the one thing with Embiid is Embiid didn't want to get up all the way up there on the level of the screen. It was almost like when I was watching the Nets series, like, you know, they're setting that screen for Kevin Durant and Lopez is playing in drop coverage. You know, that ain't going to work because he's just going to hit a spot and score that all night. If KD is going to be in that ball screen, you got to be up at the level of the screen or he's going to beat you. And they did towards the end. They brought the defender up to the level of the screen, which at least deterred it, made it a little harder on him. So what do I know? I'm just a coach.
No, Seth, I'm not going to lie to you. I talked to a lot of general managers, a lot of coaches, and I'm going to tell you something. You and I might be the smartest two dudes talking about the NBA, including those guys in a lot of ways. I'll give you something else. Lou Williams. People made a big deal about the comeback, right? And I know even on our own network, Perkins was talking about Trae Young and all that kind of stuff. Well, two things happened in that game. Number one, Lou Williams went off to get him close when Trae Young was taken out. Lou Williams is the guy I think Lou Williams over 4 to 7 games, I'm not sure about seven, can be a difference maker. And the other thing was McMillan's decision to bring in Trae Young. Back in. That is not easy. That is not easy when your team is cutting from 27 to 23. But Lou Williams, I think, is a guy that can get white hot, right? I mean, just phew. And I'm interested in seeing how he performs because I have a feeling that Lou Williams is one of those guys that's made for bigger moments.
Well, he wants that. Some guys want it. Yeah,
like Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson's made for those bigger moments. I just think there are some guys that are – and back to Embiid. Embiid needs to grow up. Like, I watched him play, and I listened to his comments. He's still a kid, and you're not going to win an NBA championship with a kid. You know, you take Chris Paul, a man, off of that team in Phoenix, they're not winning nothing. You put a man on that team, now Middleton's a man. For Chris Middleton is a damn grown-ass man that I feel like in some ways is the most valuable player on that basketball team, including Giannis. Now, you could say, well, if they didn't have Giannis, they wouldn't be there. You're right. But if they didn't have Middleton, I don't think, you know.
Well, that's why they're paying him what they're paying him now.
Right. I tell you what else, last thing, but I want to go back to something about the only team in this, in the four teams remaining that there has ever been an issue with is the Clippers. And that's load management, right? That's, you know, load management and how much does Kawhi play and all that kind of stuff. But when you really think about these four teams, unless I'm missing something, there aren't any issues with them. There aren't any players, at least publicly. There aren't any dudes getting suspended for stupid stuff. There's nothing. It seems like to me, out of these 14, then dudes that are just, at least now, I don't know, balling for a championship. Like, that's what I saw in these four. Each one of these four teams is balling for a championship. Maybe that's going to be my next T-shirt. Balling for a championship, baby.
I'll tell you the other thing that's pretty cool. I know we're going to switch to TBT. The other thing that's pretty cool to me is packed arenas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, just a different, you know, say what you want. I think emotionally the bubble was devastating. But in terms of winning, it's hard. It's harder to win when you're playing a series of home and a road. It's not even close.
Let me ask you.
I give all the credit to the world and of the emotion of what those guys went through last year. In terms of competing and winning, it's not even close.
All right. But let me ask you. In Philadelphia, in Game 7, last night, did that arena help or did that arena hurt in the last 6 minutes, 5 minutes?
Let's put it this way. They had an opportunity to have it help them. They didn't do anything.
I don't know if it
hurt or helped them. I just think that they didn't play good basketball. When you play bad basketball, you know what's going to happen in Philadelphia especially?
Then why can you say arenas help if you can't say it?
They just
played good basketball.
Well, here's the deal. It's because Philadelphia is a different animal. That's about the only place it could potentially.
That's what I'm asking you about.
I go back. You said $93 million. You got to play. I just think that what the players went through last year, as sterile as the environment was, the mental fatigue that they went through last year, to win a championship was unique. And I don't want to take anything away from that. But to win a championship when you're playing at home and on the road and traveling and doing all those things, much more difficult in terms of the actual game, not the environment, not all the other things around it. I mean, like the uncertainty of getting through the NBA last year in a pandemic, even though they were, you know, in Disney, they had things. I mean, it's a hard thing. It's like when you go on vacation, the first 5 days are great, but after a while, you're ready to get home. Most people were there for months. Just different. It's not something we're used to. But in terms of last night, make a couple of shots. I mean, that's Philadelphia fans. They're not going to just clap their hands to clap their hands.
I'm saying.
Praise is earned.
Right. All right. Were you a big guy on reading post-game quotes?
The only thing I read on post-game quotes was I knew.
No, when you coached.
Yeah. To my team?
Yeah.
No. I read my post-game quotes for this one thing. I'd have my guy clip all them off. Because I knew if my guys were saying what I said in the locker room, I was in a good place.
I'm a freshman. We're playing our first kind of big home game against Notre Dame. Knight's mad at everybody, so he starts all of us, right? We win the game. After the game, I said, well, you know, I knew it was a big game. I was just happy to start, you know, but whatever. Oh, my man. Hey, Dockets, you think this was a big game? Yeah. Did you not think the Miami of Ohio game was a big game? Did you not think the Eastern Kentucky game was a big game? You let me know, Dockage, what game you think isn't a big game, and I'll make sure that your ass doesn't get into the game. When you're here every game, you know, I'm telling you. So I told guys after that, man, I said, hey, every game's a big effing game, right? Every opponent is Purdue. Every game is for the Big Ten. So ever since then, I read every quote. Like, I say, Ben Simmons doesn't know who he is. I ain't shot well from the line this series. Offensively, I wasn't there. Ben Simmons doesn't know who he is. I didn't do enough for my teammates. There's a lot of things I need to work on. Yeah, well, he's not sure if – what guys kind of have buzzwords. I wasn't there. No, you sucked. Ben Simmons isn't an adult yet, and he shouldn't be. He's a kid, right? I mean, he's dating a Kardashian, for crying out loud. But he's not an adult yet. Embiid isn't an adult yet. Imagine Michael Jordan, even at 23 years old, after a game, like, hey, man, we stunk. I didn't play where the damn I can't. Now, I'll be honest. I thought the turning point was, well, you know, when we – I don't know how to say it, but I thought the turning point, we had an open shot. We made one free throw.
Yeah, I read that quote. He killed Simmons without mentioning his name.
Yes, but to me, that's kids, adults. Magic Johnson came into, and these guys are being paid Magic Johnson money, Seth. So that's right. Why I'm, and they're supposed to be that in that realm. Magic Johnson came in with such a personality that it pissed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar off. First game Magic played, they won our last second shot. Magic's losing his mind, right? Jumping on Kareem. Kareem's like, get the hell off me, rookie. That's first game of 82. And then what happened with Kareem? He became that as well. And it saved the end of his career and extended it. You can't win with kids in this league. You can't. And those quotes are not, and I'm not saying they won't get there. Hell, they're only in their early 20s. I mean, I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying that in that league, men prevail. And men can be 20. Men can be 22 in that league.
It's all depends on how you carry. So first of all, that they won't prevail because they're going to bust up that team.
Yeah, but you bust it up. And what do you?
You got to move Simmons.
Okay, to who? For what?
I don't know, but you got to move him. You have no choice because it's actually not healthy for him. And it's not healthy for your franchise.
But don't you think at some point, like Michael Jordan, when he, and again, I'm only comparing these guys to the best, okay? All right? But Michael Jordan, if you remember, got, like we all think Michael Jordan now is this iconic, blah, 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 blah. Michael Jordan was viewed as an incredibly selfish, horrible teammate when he was first in the NBA. All right, let me get to my point, okay? My point, and then I want you to react to this. What if you did the opposite? What if you said, hey, fellas, feel this disappointment. Now, if you're real, we'll come out the other end of this much better. We got to go through some growing pains, some horrific things to get to where we ultimately want to be. The easy thing to do is bust it up.
Well, here's the deal. They've been going through this growing pains for 5 years.
Okay.
And they're getting the same result.
So they got farther this year.
To me, that sounds good. And again, I don't know. Look, I'm not an NBA general manager. I'm just telling you right now, Ben Simmons' game can't change that much. He's always going to defend. He's always going to have a good open court vision. He's going to always be up to finish in transition. He's never going to be able to make a jump shot, or not never. He's not going to be, you know, a guy that makes you honest. You have a guy named like Embiid who you don't want to have a guy that's shrinking the court and helping every time he puts it on the floor because you don't have to guard him. How can you play a guy that can't make a free throw at the end of the game? How can you play a guy that won't shoot the ball in the fourth quarter? You're trying to win championship. Name me one team that has like
that. But these guys are all-stars. In that league, they're good enough players to be all-stars. Yeah,
they're good enough to win a championship with. Not everyone is.
Not yet.
Speaking of championships, you know what today is?
Jordan went 6 years without a championship.
That's fine. That's fine. He's got a couple.
I'm pro Ben Simmons.
I like Ben Simmons, but you got to make someone have to guard you. Michael Jordan also could jump up and drop 40 on any given night. Michael Jordan in the fourth quarter was going to shoot the ball. Michael Jordan was going to make a free throw. Michael Jordan did all the things defensively and rebounded the ball to Ben Simmons.
Don't distort my opinion with facts.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's put it this way. This podcast will be one of the few podcasts where Ben Simmons was compared to Michael Jordan. I'll leave it at that.
Yes.
Drop the mic. All right. Today, you're wearing a shirt, TBT Reveal. All right. The basketball tournament, $1 million, one takes all. It starts, obviously, the middle of July. Four regions, unbelievable. Beautiful Peoria, Charleston, West Virginia. Beautiful Columbus, Ohio, and Wichita, Kansas. I'm going to just give people who are listening, you want to watch the TBT. Why? Your pedigree means nothing. The accolades you got in college or in the NBA mean nothing. Who you played for and where you played for means nothing. I don't care if you were drafted or undrafted. Let me tell you what means. You better have toughness, talent, floor gamers, shot makers, and be fiercely, fiercely competitive and be able to get to the next play. If not, you will have a short stay in the TBT. You are gone because no marshmallows need apply.
Hey, I'll tell you this. Players, this tournament is important. This tournament is professional. I want to hear any of you whining when I rip your ass into Columbus, Ohio regional because you're selfish or you're not playing to win. I've had a few players come at me after games because they heard, hey, this is about
winning. Don't at Dan Dockage.
Don't at me. True story. If you don't want to compete and you want to play selfishly, this ain't the tournament for you because only one team wins. If you want to cause a ruckus or if you want to play the next day hungover like some have, you might as well just go home because the teams that win this are teams that could do real damage in the NCAA tournament, are teams of professionals that are together. The Carmen's Crew team, I mean, what the hell? It's all Ohio State guys.
Overseas elite.
And they have the Muhammad Ali of, overseas elite, bunch of great dudes. And Carmen's Crew has the Muhammad Ali of the TBT, Aaron Kraft, who retires every year, and then he comes back the next year, then retires. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm done. Shut up. Just play.
Well, hey, the guy's on his way to being a doctor, so when he dies on the floor and gets a floor burn, he can treat himself.
Doctor, heal thyself.
Yeah, I mean, I would think he's dealt with bruises and things of that nature already year one in medical school.
Well, even more importantly, if he's a real player, if he's a real doctor, then if one of his teammates stays out too late, like they were probably going to win it a few years ago, but Jared Sullinger got married during the middle of it, and they all stayed out too late at the party that night. But if he's really a doctor and he's really for his teammates, you know what he brings, Seth? He brings those IV bags that help your team help you hydrate. And he brings those and they got them lined up on the side.
I'll tell you what, the TBT, they're going to be, that won't be announced today. There's some moves going on. There's no overseas elite in the TBT this year. Obviously, the Golden Eagles team is trying to repeat. I think that Travis Dino, that's the big question. Will he or won't he? Will he play? I mean, you're looking at some teams that are really interesting right now. I mean, really, if you got like L.A. Cheaters, they got Casper Ware, Derek Williams, who's the second pick in the NBA draft. But you know what? That doesn't do anything. The key to that team might end up being, you know, some guys that no one even talking about, guys that are going to come off the bench. I mean, you can talk about all the great players, but it's the other guys. Watch out for Ibrahim Drive. They got some dudes. I mean, so Marcus Lee, who played in Kentucky, Jeremy Evans. But you know, it might be Akil Mitchell, who played in Israel this past year and played at Virginia. So I'm just telling you, the third, fourth week of July, tune into the TBT. Every game is an event. Every game ends in the Elam ending. You're going to see shot makers, playmakers, but you're going to see dudes play so hard. You'll say, why are these guys playing so hard? I'll tell you why. $1 million. Just $1 million. That's Dan Dockage type money, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, before we go, I got to give a shout out. One of my all-time favorite people, I don't know if you know the game, but she's an American badass. She is America's toughest athlete. Her name is Lily King. She's a swimmer. When she was 19, 4 years ago in the Olympics, she called out a Russian, the world record holder, called her out for cheating, and then beat her ass for a gold medal. Lily's back, baby. Lily is back in the Olympics. She'll be on my show this week. She's one of my all-time favorites. She swims in a pond with snapping turtles. She's an American. She would be good in the TBT.
She should create a team with a cause, because that's the other great thing about the TBT. You got Team Challenge ALS. You got Team Jimmy V. You got Autism's Army. You got the Griffith Family Foundation group that is amazing. I mean, look, I'm telling you one thing. TBT, there's nothing better. There's nothing better. I mean,
I'm a little sad that Andrew Dockich isn't in. Had a tough go last year as a player coach. Didn't like being player coach. Too many people barking at him. He got a real education about player coach. He didn't like
it. Well, big boy. Hey, family model, please.
Back up.
Come on now.
He's got freaking camp, and he's got a real job this year, and he couldn't put it together. But as I tell him, every experience in coaching teaches you something. Every single one.
Sideline cancer. I don't know. I got a lot of stuff going through my head. Sideline cancer. Cause they got to the championship game last year.
Well,
a little culture. Sideline cancer's got a couple of Indiana guys, right? You got Mo Creek and Remy Abel, two guys that were at Indiana at one point. Mo Creek, by the way, game winner, Elam Ending against Overseas Elite, very big time. So
Mo Creek, if he didn't have such horrible injuries, would be in the NBA right now. That's a dude that averaged or scored 31 against Kentucky, John Wall and that crew as a freshman. And then he had these horrible injuries. Mo Creek's one of the best stories, not only in the TBT, but all across basketball in terms of him coming back and playing. And you mentioned it last year, man. He hits a game winner. I've never been more happy for someone that wasn't my own family than I was for Mo Creek.
I'm with you. All right. Great shirt. D squared. Behave yourself. I'd like to welcome in Kansas head coach Bill Self. Bill, real before we get into your team and all that stuff going on today, all of a sudden the NCAA came down Supreme Court came down with a decision, obviously on the antitrust suit with the NCAA. How do you respond to it and how do you move forward?
Well, I don't really know exactly what you do on both of those. I think it's anticipated that this could happen. I believe that this ruling kind of makes inevitable even more obvious. And certainly we're not putting the genie back in the bottle or the toothpaste back in the tube. It's out. And I think with this ruling, and I could be wrong on this because I'm not an attorney, obviously, but with this ruling, it's going to set some guidelines, I would think, that now with what happens with the NIL, it's all going to be based on what we could withstand in court. And I think that was probably the case beforehand, but this certainly changes what was viewed as amateurism and the model that it presented. So I don't think it's a bad day. I'm not sure it's a great day, but I do think it's a positive step in trying to come to a conclusion in what our sport will potentially look like moving forward. Because right now, as you know, we're just in flux. We don't have any idea what's going on.
Yeah, Bill, like your state had something on the books already where, you know, like the July 1 deadline where the NIL would be, you know, basically enacted and viable, or were you guys waiting as a state to see what others were going to do?
To my understanding, our state did some type of tentative or unofficial vote last year that was nearly unanimous, like unanimous in the Senate or whatever, not necessarily unanimous in the House or whatever it was. I don't know exactly how it was or all but two or three people voted in favor of the NIL out of hundreds. And then this year, it was presented in connection with another bill. And so the two bills were tied together. You could not vote on the NIL independently. And from what I understand, that was tabled because they could not come to a conclusion on how that bill should be presented. So we were really behind. We went from thinking we were going to be one of the states that was at least attempting to get ahead of it to now one of the states that without question has fallen well behind it. But, you know, with what Congress could potentially rule or what the NCAA could step in and rule, that would trump, you know, anything else that's taken place. So I am hopeful, much like the conversations that's been spoken about the last month or so, I'm hopeful something can be done that affects all states equally here in the next, basically the next 10 days.
How do you deal? Like, you have recruits on campus now, the recruiting calendar's open. You can finally actually have face-to-face contact with prospects, get them on campus, have them kind of get a feel for what's going on. What kind of questions do you guys have to answer regarding it? Because I got to believe it's something that has to be part of the recruiting pitch per se in today's environment.
You know what? I don't know if it's part of the pitch, but it's certainly part of the education that's going on, because I really don't know exactly how to pitch it yet. I'm telling them this is going to happen. This is what it could potentially look like. You know, we haven't been set with the guidelines on exactly what they will be, the guardrails. We do believe that schools cannot actively be involved in this. We believe that they could have representation that could do this for them. You know, we believe that, you know, as you know, this may sound different than the way it is, but as long as it's not conflicting with the school's already in place contract, that is pretty much free game, that you could go do whatever. Like, it'd be hard for an individual to do some type of sponsorship deal with Coca-Cola if the university is a Pepsi provided university. Could be the same thing with shoe companies. We don't know about restaurants. We don't know about dry cleaners. We don't know about car dealerships. We have a pretty good understanding on what the value of $100,000 followers on Instagram would mean compared to somebody with 500,000 followers, compared to somebody with 10,000 followers. But everything is abstract, at least the way I understand it. And so we're not really using it to sell. We're just saying whatever it is, we'll maximize it. But that's about all we've gone. That's about as far as we've gone so far.
Last season, just in a nutshell, I mean, getting through last season, how hard, I mean, like, you know, we were here in the studio, you know, there are games going on, you're calling them from a closet, but living it, I mean, you've been in this thing a long time, and you know, at every level, living it at your level compared to maybe living it at your Oral Roberts days, I mean, like, what was it like living it on a day-to-day basis?
You know what? We had such good attitudes, Seth, and we took the approach, at least I did, and this kind of goes against my personality probably in prior years, to not let anything that we don't control affect me to the point where it affects our team. Something happened, roll with it. I mean, it was almost like, you know how we could get so upset and pissed as coaches when the bus is supposed to pick you up when you fly in charter had a flat tire and is an hour late, and it throws up your whole walkthrough. So now you don't even get a chance to get to the gym. You got to do it at the hotel. That this year would be like, big deal. So what? We'll get more rest. I mean, it was just a total different mindset that I think I had. The one thing I probably didn't take into consideration as much, because everybody I have found in coaching as you have too, everybody will tell you, at least to an extent, what they think you want to hear. So it's hard for a kid to say, "Hey, how you doing today, Dave?" And for him to say, "You know, Coach, I'm struggling. I'm struggling, Dave." Most of the response is, "Hey, I'm great, Coach. How are you doing?" You know, and the mental health aspect of the isolation, of not being able to see families, of not being able to travel home, of only being around your own players, which in large part, you know this well as anybody, misery loves company, especially on teams. And then you go from a situation where you get beat on the road, you get home at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the next morning you're having breakfast with those same kids that were upset about what happened the night before, and you're going to lunch with those same kids, you're lifting weights with those same kids, you're practicing with those same kids, you're having dinner with those same kids, you're talking to the same coaches, and there was really nobody else. Even academics was done online, I mean, or done via Zoom or whatever. So I do think there was depression may be too strong, but I think that there was some things our players went through that I probably didn't fully understand while they were going through them, because, you know, when things are going bad, it's nice to have an outlet. These kids all across America, they didn't have an outlet last year. So it was a good year. But certainly I think our team got closer, and but certainly I don't think it was an enjoyable year by too many people. If you go back in my 29 years, least amount of fun I've had, not coaching the team, but all the amenities that go along with coaching a team, and I would say all the players felt like during their college experience last year was probably the least amount of fun that they've ever had. I would even think, you know, I can't speak to them, but I bet Baylor and Gonzaga felt the same way. But you know, I don't know exactly that though.
You learn anything from last year that you can carry forward, at least for you, you know, dealing with your team?
Oh yeah, I think so. I think so. I think there's ways you can still be demanding, but maybe in a more constructive, positive way. You know, I've kind of gotten into these visions and team goals and culture and really defining what all that is in the last couple of years. I actually thought that helped us last year with our team. You know, just to give you an example, I think the way we communicate with our players now is actually better than it was a couple of years ago. And I'm not saying it was bad before, but, you know, different players are different. Different people hear things differently. One player you can be very direct with, one player you have to be direct to another player with to get them to hear it. I mean, there's a lot of different things about it, but you know, just coming up with a way in our culture and how we communicate with each other and to be better talkers and better listeners. There's a lot of things that I think we've done that will help us moving forward. And I think COVID, we'll look back at it at some point in time in the pandemic saying we were better now because of that. I think all employment will be, or corporations or businesses, because they figured out a way we can do it from home. We can do it isolated, or we can do it as a group. And now we're going to blend it to what really works best. And I think there'll be a lot of people make adjustments based on how COVID was this past year.
How much fun is it to at least have your team where you can get back and put your hands on them and spend time?
Great. Yeah, it's great. Especially it's better now than most years, because most of the times that you'd be coaching your guys or putting your hands on them, as you said, are guys that you've already had your hands on before.
Sure.
I mean, hey, I think we may have 8 or 9 newcomers. And of course, they're not all here yet. So, I mean, this is fun. This is fun. And it's also a little scary and thinking, ooh, you know, because they don't have a clue yet on what you really want or what you think's important, which is fine. You're not going to win any games in June anyway, but I think it's been refreshing and fun. I think getting out on the road, even though you and I both love recruiting so much, but even doing that now seems to be more fun than what it was when you had to do it. Now we kind of welcome that. And it's the same thing with summer workouts. I've always been a guy that, you know, we work hard in the summer and all that stuff, but I wanted my coaches to probably be the main voice a lot of times instead of me being the main voice. Now, I want to be out there all the time with them and those sorts of things, even more so maybe than in past years, which I think is refreshing as well.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, like, just going on the road, like, you hadn't been on the road in, what, 18 months? 15 months?
Yeah, it's I don't know exactly, but okay. But you know, in all honesty, I haven't been on the road really recruiting since the fall. So it's been at least 18 months, since 20 months probably. I mean, do a little bit in the wintertime when you're playing, but not that much. And then it's eliminated last spring, last summer, last fall. And then, of course, we're just now picking back up. So So it's good to get out and see kids. That's something else, the recruiting. There'll be a people make mistakes, recruiting off YouTube videos and Zoom. There'll be some mistakes made. But I think at the end of the day, Kansas is still going to get kind of the players that they were going to get before. And I think Texas Tech will. I think LSU will, or Alabama. I still think that we'd rather see guys, but I still think you're pretty much going to get who you're going to get regardless of.
It is bizarre. Just the portal in general, rebuilding, your team, finding pieces. You guys have done really, really well with it. But even that is different. I mean, because, coaching your team and keeping your team, and then figuring out the pieces that you can add to your team to create. Like, you're a big culture guy. You've had guys, you've been one and duds, but you've had a lot of guys that have been around and with the program, whether it's Frank or, I can go through a whole list of guys.
Devontae Svee. Our best players that we've ever had here, most talented, have been the ones that get in and get out, most talented. But our foundation's always been, our upperclassmen. But it is different. The portal, the one thing that I misvalued or misjudged a little bit on the portal is your own players that are three-year starters or two-year starters that start every game, that are your third leading scorers. Now when you recruit, you're saying we want to plug in. Now you plug it in somebody that could potentially take away from their role that they're used to or from their role expanding. There's a lot of guys out there that are thought of in their mind to be a fourth or fifth option and start and play every minute almost. That now they sounds a lot better being a second option, maybe the way somebody else can present it. So it's not going to be just guys that don't play that leave. It'll be guys that play that leave. And, of course, that's going to happen at all levels. I think it's bad, Seth. I think it's a bad, bad rule. I mean, we want to give student athletes more flexibility and more freedom, but we're going to look up 5 years from now and we're not even going to recognize our sport, at least the way it has been with NIL. And I'm not saying that's bad. It's just going to be different. But, the portal's wide open. So now the reason why you pick a school out of the portal will be a big reason because of NIL. There's just a lot more unintended consequences that are going to occur than I think what we originally thought there would be.
You coach your guys, every day. I've been in a bunch of your practices. You have fun with them. Your teams play hard. Your conditioning stuff gets them in great shape. But you coach them. Is that going to be just – I look at it. I was looking at myself in the mirror. Do you sit there and go, all right, I know we talked about communication, but all right, if I coach that guy, what I say, not only how I say it, but the actual specific – how is he going to interpret that?
Yeah.
Is someone worrying about how every single thing, your freshman, you got to redefine playing hard. You got to define some roles. Everyone can't be woohoo, and we're just playing.
Yeah.
How hard is that? That was the thing I was saying. How do you define roles and then get a guy to realize he's a big part of what you're doing?
That's something that I don't think, our fan base may disagree, but that's not something that we normally struggle with, is getting guys to buy into what we think wins. I'm not saying we batted 100,000, but we've been decent at that. It's going to be there's going to be a fine line, because do you coach kids the way that you have to coach them for the benefit of their life and them getting as good as they can be, and for the benefit of your team? Or maybe do you make exceptions because of the portal? And the teams that make exceptions because of the portal won't be the teams, more than likely, that will be standing there on Monday night, with a net around their neck. It's going to be those teams that allow you to do both, to coach them hard and understand we're not coaching out of fear. We are going to coach you the way that we know gives you the best chance in your life to be a player, or maybe even to be a more productive father, husband, provider, whatever. And we're going to go through some crap to get you there more than likely. Whereas now we want to try to avoid the crap. That's going to be the difference. And I've always been one, I don't know how you were, Seth, I've always been one that welcomed the crap. I thought, now that we got through this, now we're going to get good. That we had, you know, I've never thought a team became a team until they go through something together. And that together could be good things, but that could together could also be when you lose three out of four and the fan base is calling for your head, or, you know, what Philadelphia 76ers are going through this morning. Sure. That's when they can get good. You know, it's too late because the season's over there, but that's the kind of stuff that I've always taken great pride in. All right, okay, we're three games behind in the league race. Now we're going to find out what we're made of. And guys have always kind of taken pride in that. And I think it'll be the same with us. But I you know, the cool thing is, you know, when you recruit, and you know this, well, he's old school. He doesn't buy on this. He doesn't let his kids have the same freedom that maybe somebody else does. And most of that stuff is crap, to be honest with you. But it's also something that, you know, coaches are going to think about that stuff. And I don't know that I can coach a way that I allow guys to be different than what I know is best for them or to win. So, but I
you had know. That same conversation every single guy I've talked to that I've literally that's the same thing. You got to, you know, maybe I'm talking to guys that have been lifers and you know got into it. And that's, you know, impact lives. Sometimes you got to. You're trying to help someone get somewhere they can't get, not just on the court, but as a parent, as a dad, as a husband, as a every aspect of their life. And I mean, you can't just walk every time things go a little south.
I know. Let's fight through it. You know, let's don't walk around the wall. Let's go through it. But the thing about it is, I do believe this. I think a lot of it probably depends a little bit on the coach and job situation. You know, if you look at high schools, you know, it's a little bit different being an established coach at a place where you've got credibility, and then that established coach goes to somebody, some other school, and three of your starters are on the school board. I mean, it's a little bit different on how you would approach things, and it's the same way with us. You know, you could have a new president, new AD. This is the focus of that administration. Or you can be with somebody that maybe you've got some tender and some goodwill built up, saying, "Coach, we believe you. Coach them up however you think is best." Because there's a lot of people that think they know best, even though they've never been in the arena. I personally don't think it's going to affect us much. At least I hope it doesn't. But if it does, I hope it's for the better.
That last thing, like just two quick things. You got three guys from the portal. Kind of give us, your fans will be listening to this, get a little thumbnail of those guys.
Well, we got the biggest name is Remy Martin. Yep. You know, he averaged 19 a game in the Pac-12 couple of years and been first team all league. And Remy's flirting with the draft. And, you know, as far as invites to the combines and things like that, it hadn't gone as well. It's probably what he had hoped. And so I think that we're in a spot to hopefully he can help us, but hopefully also we can help him. I mean, Bobby and them did a great job with him at Arizona State. So there's nothing negative there whatsoever. And of course, nothing negative from Remy, but you know, we recruited him out of high school and he's played here and he's beat us twice when he was young, freshman and sophomore year, when he would basically made all the plays down the stretch to get them a W. I mean, it was something that interested us, but it's also it interested him, and maybe we'll be a good fit for him because I do think there's some things that he can probably do better as a player, but I also love his talents. So I'm excited about him. We got a kid, I just spoke to him today, and we're talking about him. Has he completed his master program and exactly what second master's program he's going to complete while he's here. And that's the kid, Jalen Coleman Lands out of Iowa State. He's 24 years old. And he said to me during the conversation, "You hadn't talked to a lot of dudes like me here recently, have you?" And I said, "No, I mean, the 18-year-olds I'm talking to are a little different than your perspective." I mean, he's like going, coach, if I can get an A in this one class, it'll get my overall in this area, and I may not have to take another entrepreneurship class. And I mean, it's a little different conversation than, but I'm excited about him. And the biggest reason is he can shoot. I mean, he's a 40%, he's a 40% 6-year college player. I mean, so he's transferred and set out, and he got a red shirt, a hardship, a health injury. So, and then he get the year back. So I'm excited about him. And then the one that nobody knows about is a 6'9" kid out of Missouri Southern, that first team All-American 3 years. Name's Cam Martin. He was actually Trey Young's high school teammate at Norman High for a year. And the dude can just get the ball in the basket. He can shoot. You know, he made 11 threes in one game last year and 9 in another. He's had 54, 46. Now, granted, he was playing against Division II competition, but to make 9 or 11, you still got to get the ball in the basket. So it'll give us something totally different. And he and David together, I think that that could be pretty formidable. So, yeah, we think we've done okay. But, you know, time will tell. You know as well as I do, they all look good until you get them. And then when you start putting the pieces together, do they exactly mesh the way you want them to? But, you know, I actually like these guys quite a bit.
Two, I'm going to give you two names real quickly, and we'll get you out of it. Larry Keating. I mean, growing up, you know, his son's a good friend of mine. Growing up, he was a guy kind of, honestly, a lot of us looked up to in a lot of ways just because of what he did with Coach Blaney and standing up for what is right. And I know he was with you guys for a long time as an associate athletic director for basketball. But just any thoughts on him? Because I loved Coach Keating.
I think Larry was an acquired taste. I think when you first met him, you saw this big guy that you thought was gruff and tough and very direct, which he always was. I'm not sure I met a nicer man in our business. Love kids, always wanted to give them opportunities, second chances, was definitely a coach's ally. And I've talked to George Blaney and what he did that probably cost him his own job as Seton Hall's athletic director when they told him they needed to make a change. And he said, I'm not making this change. It's not the right thing to do. And so they made two changes, the AD and the coach. To me, about as good as it gets. And the way that he handled our scheduling, Seth, it put an element to me in there. You know how certain guys can add value to a program and maybe not appear that they have a huge role? This dude added value. I mean, what he did for us and scheduling, we've been a one seed 9 of the last 15 years or whatever. And it's because of Larry Keating. These teams didn't always play to that level, but he just knew exactly the type of teams that he wanted to put before us to play. He knew if you played a CBS game on the road, you got money. If you played ESPN games on the road, you didn't. I mean, he had it all. I mean, at least going over there, he had it all figured out to best maximize the bang for the buck and everything. So, yeah, he'll be missed. You know, it's sad because you and I are getting at that age, even though, you know, I don't want to say we're ready to retire or anything like that, but – this guy works his whole life, he and Jamie, and then you spend 18 months away and you're gone. You know, so sad, but what a great man, though. Great man.
Coach Keating was great. All right, now my partner can't be here, my man Dan Dockich, who his days are numbered. You got a message for him that we can share? Got a message from my man D-Squared?
I would think I could probably speak on behalf of most viewers, you know, that we could probably do without the dry sarcasm that he presented on a nightly basis most of the time. But one thing about Dan, though, in all honesty, he made it, you know, a little bit like Charles in this way. You know, what Charles say the other night, he said he's going to retire by 60 because he can't say what he wants to say anymore. Well, Dan said what he wanted to say all along. And I do think in many ways that's been refreshing and obviously very knowledgeable, and he'll certainly be missed, but he will still be heard in some way, shape, or form. I guarantee it.
He'll surface. I'm not sure I would want him calling my games when I was coaching, but I think he's the best in terms of storytelling and saying the game and having a little opinion, but that's, I'm biased.
To me, that's what kind of sells. I mean, you guys are asked to have an opinion. I don't think any of you guys are asked to be politically correct all the time. I mean, if you have an opinion, state it. And one thing about the guys that are real successful on air, such as you, and of course Dan is also one of them, is that, you know, he spoke his mind. And you may not agree with what he had to say, but he at least provoked thought, though.
I appreciate you doing this, man. I really do. I know there's a lot of stuff. You got recruits on campus. You guys just came back from being on the road last weekend, right?
We did, yes. Yeah.
And you got, I think, is there another weekend window coming up?
Yeah, we're going out again this weekend with the high school teams, and then we'll hit it with their AU team starting in July. So
I appreciate it. Hopefully I'll see you, get a chance to see you this summer.
I hope so.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it.
See you, bud.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.